Dwayne Hansen's art is often confused with reality. Perhaps during a walk through the gallery of the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts, you were surprised to find, in the midst of the contemporary sculpture, a man dressed in work clothes, napping in an easy chair, his arm dangling limply over the chair, and the newspaper it had been holding dropped right beneath the arm. That man was one of Hansen's super-realistic sculptures. More of Dwayne Hansen's work can now be seen in Philadelphia at an exhibition called 8 Contemporary American Realists at the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts. The show runs until August 30th. Dwayne Hansen's work has been shown in galleries and museums around the United States and Europe, including the Princeton University Art Museum, the Whitney Museum of Art, the Walker Art Center, the Sidney Janus Gallery in New York. His work is represented in the permanent collection of the Georges Pompidou Cultural Center in Paris. That's the museum also known as the Beaubourg. Dwayne Hansen, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you for inviting me here today.
I'd like to, if I may, just quote a statement that you have written in your statement of your work. After years of uncomfortable ventures into abstract, non-objective, and conventional sculpture with traditional materials of clay, plaster, stone, and wood, I finally embraced realism as my mode of expression. Can we talk a little bit about why abstraction made you uncomfortable?
Surely. Mm-hmm. Well, I felt that, I was initially a realist. I came from a very small town in the Midwest and had no art training. All the art I did was, picked up on my own. So I was doing quite realistic things in high school, and then I went to college, and they said, that's old-fashioned. You got to get with it now. You got to be abstract. You got to cut things up, and that was part of it, probably. And I really was into the more formalistic arrangement of forms in different materials: wood, stone, clay, welded metal. But I never really could. I wasn't too happy with the results, and I was always looking for something that would appeal to a wider audience than just my sort of personal subjective preference to a certain arrangement of shapes, what you would do in wood or stone or metal. And I didn't know how to do it, see. And so finally I decided that I was just going back to realism, and I didn't care what was going on. It wasn't quite the thing to do, but I thought, I don't care, and I want to do this, and I'm going to see what I can do with it.
Your realism now, the works that I've seen are very much like real people, clothed.
Right.
It's often hard to distinguish. I mean, if you're just walking into a room,
yeah,
you would think that they were real people. Of course, in a gallery, there's every reason to suspect that they're art, and they're usually stilled in a moment of time.
Right.
I mean, it's not a pose someone would
hold
for a very long period of time.
But
is that the way that you started working once you decided to go back to realism?
No. It was a long, involved process. I did a little figure in 1965 of a dead woman. Oh, it was about maybe 2 feet long. And she's on an operating table and covered with a sheet. And I call this the abortion. And I felt very, self-conscious about this piece, because everybody would look at it. I was teaching in a school in Florida, in a college there, and my colleagues would come in and give me dirty looks, And so I sort of left it alone for about a year, and then they were having a show called the Sculptors of Florida Show, to be held in Miami in 1966, and I had this piece sitting around. They said, well, why don't you enter it? And the junk sculptor, Stankiewicz, was coming down to jury the show, see? So I brought the piece in, and I had another one I'd done, and they both got in the show. Only 27 were selected out of, I don't know, so many hundreds that were submitted. And they put this piece down in the corner, tried to hide it. The head of the group was very upset about it. And so then the critic wrote it up in the Miami Herald. And she wrote, so-and-so got first prize, and second, and third, and so on. I didn't get any prize, naturally. And then she said, now we come to the work of Dwayne Hansen. And now this was in big, bold, black print, you know. Now we come to the work of Dwayne Hansen. This we do not consider a work of art. We consider such subject matters over and beyond the category of art. And we know artists do some of this terrible stuff, but we wish they wouldn't do it, see? So that was my first review in this type of work. And I thought, well, the hell with her, you know, this critic. I'm really going to pursue this, and I'm going to really... obviously, I struck a sore nerve there, and that was part of it. I thought, well, I'm really going to pursue this, and I did, and I did another figure that was on the subject of death, and I entered this theme of violence. And I was very upset by the sociological terrors, you know, of the mid-60s, the war and the riots and all these things going on really bothered me. And I thought I'd do a protest piece to protest the war in Vietnam. I did a group of four dead soldiers and one dying. And I did an accident victim, a crime victim, a couple of crime victims, a race riot. I showed the violent action in sports, football players, and I wound up with the Bowery derelicts, the piece you were talking about at the Boberg now. So I covered this, and that was my first venture into realism after I'd been sidetracked and detoured into more formalistic and abstract adventures, which didn't work out.
As you say, your work struck a sore note with the critic, the abortion uh-huh. piece. Was it the realism or was it the content and abortion?
Well, I think it was the content at the time because my realism hadn't been developed. You see, my idea was not that it had to be carried to the nth degree as it sort of has developed on its own now, but it just worked out in a different way. In other words, I was interested in the concept, the idea behind the works. So these earlier works are much different than the later work. They're pieces where I learned a lot, and where the subject matter was very important. They're almost like expressionistic works, where I was interested in sort of a commentary about contemporary life and the bad things that were going on, as opposed to I just accept things now more or less. There's less commentary in my work, and hardly any commentary, I would think so now, or objective.
You had a middle phase there, though, between the social commentary and the non-commentary period that you're in.
Oh, yes, I worked into, you know, just don't jump from one thing into the other, you know, with not working it out a little bit. So this earlier period evolved into a more critical period, more satirical types of work, like The Tourists, which are fairly well known, I guess. The tourists are decked out in a rather outlandish attire, and I also did a very stout supermarket shopping lady with her hair up in curlers and runs in her stockings, and she has her cart filled with junk food and the things she shouldn't have, TV dinners and spaghetti and cake and cookies and all the goodies. And then I also did an overstuffed sunbather, similar theme, and a very tough, mean-looking hard hat with the American flag on his helmet.
Often for museum goers, in the contemporary section of the museum, the question that comes to mind is, why is this piece here? What makes this piece very good, and what makes this piece art? And there's different reasons for asking those questions. If you're looking at something very abstract or very minimal or conceptual, mm-hmm. I mean, you might wonder why it's art because you're not sure what you see. You're not sure what validates it. But if you're looking at something that so closely mimics reality, as some of your sculptures do, then you can say to yourself, well, why is this art? I mean, I've seen this in real life. This is a recreation of it.
Yeah.
It's perhaps a very perfect recreation of it, but why is this important enough? Why is this powerful enough to, be picked out and put in this museum?
I don't know. I can't answer you, but I feel that art is what the artist does, one thing, and for my work, I feel, I don't worry about if it's art or not. That's for somebody else, and I couldn't tell you, and I really don't care. But I do it, and if it's not art, a lot of people got stuck paying a lot of money out for nothing. But it's really the... See, all this stuff is really the same if it's realism. People don't really realize that if you you make a canvas with one line on it, or if you make a cube or a bunch of cubes, or you scatter a bunch of lumber on the floor and call it art, and you can... there's a certain relationship between all that. Now, I know a lot of people hate realism because they're into the abstract bag, see, and I love abstract. I have, I collect abstract. I have nothing against abstract or anything that's good, and you can tell the good because it's all involved. Well, first you have to invent something new, see. You know, you have to say something in a new way at least. And then it takes care of itself because all painters, basically they deal with color and shape and texture and form and all these things, and all sculptors do. It's all related. So that's not. I think that's really silly. The way people react about that's not art, or this is art, or this is better than that. You know, it's just different ways.
In realism,
right?
With realism, when you're looking at a piece, you have a hook into it.
That's right. Everybody's everybody knows.
Yeah, you know what
everybody's
it is.
Everybody's a critic.
Right. See? Well, you don't need an explanation. Well, what
That's
does
right.
this mean?
Yeah,
which is
literal.
What a lot of
people. Well, we got criticized for being literal, that there was nothing. See, you had to be mysterious and you look at that thing and say, what the hell does that mean? You know, that thing hanging on the wall. I can't figure it out, and so. Only the artist knows, or maybe he doesn't know, or maybe he's pulling your leg, or maybe he really does think he knows, but he doesn't. And maybe he does know, and it really doesn't matter, does it? As long as something is there that fascinates you. I think all art has a mystery. Now, if I could tell you what art is, it'd be no sense doing it, would it? Because anybody could do it, and there'd be a formula. But I don't know what it is, so I do it. And I don't think anybody else does either. It's just this magic, involved, mystery involved. And it's something that hits you. It sends out vibrations. And those colors or that form those soup cans of Andy Warhol, for example, they send me. Why is that? Soup cans? That's you look at a row of soup cans in the grocery store, and you say, so what? That's nothing. But he did something with that, the coolness, the objectivity of that. And it's a symbol. And some of these things are symbols. I think it helps the viewer to understand the world in which we live. If we didn't have artists, why we'd go around and wonder what all this was about. But we look at the art and sort of... tells us what's going on in the world, and it's pretty chaotic, which the art world is chaotic, it reflects the real world, and but still there's symbolism there, there's different types of work that one can study and get some idea of what life is about today.
Because of the ability for of art to help us understand what's
right.
around us,
exactly.
Art can often be used for propaganda. In mm-hmm. some countries, art like that is encouraged, and more abstract art is highly
that's always been one of the functions.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, your work, for instance, I could imagine would be the kind of work that if someone wanted to really make a statement about something, that perhaps they would commission you to do it. Since your work is realistic, since mm-hmm. if you made a statement, most people would probably recognize what that statement was. Has that happened where, you know, you have been commissioned to do something with the meaning, pre-assigned to your
work? It's not really that simple. You know, people, you might say, there's no trouble in understanding my work, but people do look at the work for the wrong reasons, or they think they understand it or appreciate it for the wrong reasons. You see, they just see something real, most people. Well, not all of them, because a lot of them, I mean, they've written down, you know, they get the idea. I mean, people are pretty sharp, but I'm not putting anybody down this way, but some of them do. You know, they just see the realism and they just think that's great, and that's all right. But beyond that, you know, like I've just said, was we had the violence and the critical, satirical part, and now less commentary, but still they're stereotypes, you know, of the working class or maybe the aged everyday people who are suffering the human conditions of hard work, frustration, aging and fatigue, those things, you know, which we all have to go through. So that's sort of a universal human problem, you know, everyone has, and sort of tried to touch that a little bit. I don't know how successful it's been, but I'm very concerned with the quality of life and a lot of my work has, I guess, a certain amount of impact because I've dealt with the types that convey impact, but the physical size for one thing, and then like I did a dishwasher, and he's a very big man, and on a milk crate, wire crate, you know, and I've emphasized the weight of that, and then the gestures for his head is down, he's sort of just collapsed on there to give that sort of sense of isolation and sadness, a lot of people are living lives of, as somebody wrote, quiet desperation, I read somewhere, and so this is really a heavy consideration from a heavy thought, people have asked me, why don't you make something happy, smiling faces, I said, this is what I choose to do. I mean, that's really their problem, that if they want smiling faces,
there's plenty of buttons you can buy.
Yeah, plenty of buttons. I mean, I think that I'm not a sad person, but I love sad music, see? And I like the paintings, like those sad faces of Rembrandt, those portraits where he was sort of down and out at the end. I mean, they're very poignant. There's something, like I said before, the mystery is part of it, and that, I mean, it's hard to talk about these things, but that, I think that's maybe part of it, so it's become intuitive with me now.
I wonder how much the context of a poignant piece defines how you look at the piece. For instance, in thinking about your work, when I stumbled upon your piece at the mm-hmm. Pennsylvania Academy, which I referred to before, it was such a surprise to see this man in that environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm sure that I looked at the piece very differently in that environment than I would if that work was
built, shock value.
Yeah, it's built as a monument to the working class or something, or placed outside for poignant value.
Yeah. It's not obvious.
What's not obvious?
Well, where it was sitting, or where you stumbled upon it. You know, you happened upon it, and you didn't expect it there. So, but that, so it was a sort of a shock, amount of shock involved.
But I also feel probably that it reflected the way I see people in that pose,
right,
because
right,
you don't mm-hmm. people don't look dazed or fall asleep haphazardly in a specific position to convey a meaning. I mean, you run into it; it happens.
Yeah.
And that's the connection that I see between between your work and its possible more heavy-handed uses of meaning. If you were, commissioned to do a poignant piece to be placed outside a hospital or an old age home or something.
That's right. That's right. I mean, what I wanted to say there was that I didn't. These pieces aren't meant to shock anymore. I guess they do because of their inherent nearness to the viewer. And I went to the Soviet Union 2-3 years ago, and you have all those statues of Lenin, in the parks and in the theater and all over. Nobody looks at anymore. They're very menacing, with the clenched fist and they. But nobody really considers them, I think, officially, because they're so obviously piece of propaganda, and it's a different thing.
What about classical realist sculpture and classical portraiture? Have you been inspired or influenced by those painters or sculptors?
I don't know. Well, who knows what one is influenced by, because you come up against so many things that you like or dislike, and you're influenced by both. But I'm on my way to Europe now, and I'll be over in Berlin shortly, and I want to look up those Holbeins there. I love them, in the Dahler Museum. And any of the Dutch realists, I love to see them. And of course Rodin, and I love Riemann Schneider, and most people in this country don't know that name, but he was a master woodcarver of the 1500s in Würzburg in Germany, and he did a number of carved altars, and the figures are very detailed and remarkable.
In much classical sculpture, we marvel at the tensions created by the revealing of muscles, the veins, the lines of the naked body, and of course your bodies are all clothed in the clothing that if your sculptor was a person would sure to be wearing. Some are in, as you described it, very loud tourist clothes and Hawaiian shirts. The naked body doesn't change. I mean, the human body unclothed remains the same through history. So if a sculpture dates in any way, in other words, if we can look at a sculpture and say, well, I think that was done in the 19th century, it's because of the style in which it's done, not because of the proportions of the
body. Well, there are periods where the nudes are fat and then they're thin, and they change too. But like you say, it's different.
But yours are perhaps dated in a sense by the clothes that they wear. The kinds of clothes you'd find a tourist in will probably have changed in the next 10 years.
Yeah. Well, looking back, you can think of workers, I think, 10, 15 years ago that, they dressed pretty much the same. Maybe in casual clothing and some of the other mod outfits. I avoid those things. And then if it comes to that, of it being a dated thing, I can take an arm off. Some of the arms are screwed on, or a leg even, where I can replace the clothing. I don't worry about that much. It also can be looked on as a documentary thing, where it documents a certain period too, which is not a bad thing,
mm-hmm.
unless it's obviously, a nostalgic thing. But I don't think with the my works don't indicate any of that. You know, they're types that carry on their own, whereby the clothing I don't think makes that much difference if it was if it's a little outdated. And really I don't worry about that too much, because my work is made for people to look at now, to consider now. I'm not too concerned about what happens 100 years from now. Maybe one should, but I feel it. There's too much wrong with the museums today that don't show the contemporary work, and they're showing rehashing what has been done in art history, which, you know, you can read about it and look at it in a book and learn about it. And it's nice to see it occasionally, but I don't see going all out to bring back these old things, you know, of 100 years ago, or unless you tie it in with, you know, some contemporary program, that some point you want to make, you know, like contrast or whatever. There isn't enough of, you see, the public doesn't really know what's going on, what the artist is dealing with out there. And there are many, many interesting things going on that they don't know about, because they're not exposed to it, see.
Well, talking about contemporary shows, a lot of contemporary shows in museums or galleries have a subject arrangement. I mean, you know, 8 artists are invited because they work in a similar style, or because their work refers to a similar theme. I'm thinking here specifically of a show that you did. I think it was maybe at the Whitney in New York, and the show was called Torment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, how do you feel being included in a show like that? Because the title of the show is an attempt to define the meaning of your work.
Well, that was a bad show, but... that was my first exposure in New York. See, I just moved up to New York. And, you know, to start out with, you sort of take what you can get.
Human Concern, right. Personal Torment, The Grotesque in American Art, show in 1969.
Yeah, well, my work sort of fitted in, I guess, at that time with that.
Is it a good way to show your art, though? You know, do you feel comfortable showing your art under a subject hierarchy?
I really don't care what they call it. I mean, if your work stands is meaningful, it doesn't matter what you call it, does it? I mean, what's the name? What's in a name, as Shakespeare says? It's in the inherent work that's important.
The show that your work is in now in Philadelphia is called 8 American Realists. Now, we know that there is a new movement of realists because we see realist works and because we read about this new movement. Yeah. Do you feel part of a movement?
No. I mean, what movement?
The new realism.
Well, yeah. You could call it... Well, movements are funny, aren't they? Because as soon as you have something like that going on, you get about 100 people, you know, they're calling themselves realists or new realists. And so it's very confusing, I think, to the public and say, well, what's going on here? You know, all these people, that one's doing this thing and one's doing the other, and one's painting upside down, and one's using the air gun, and another one's using an air gun or airbrush, it's rather confusing. So a show like this should define what realism, contemporary realism is about. Unfortunately, I don't think it does, but that's one of the things that happens. I mean, there's not to say, there are different types of realists, and the type of realist movement, if you want to call it, that I belong to is one that really has no style. Of course, you could say no style is also a style. Has this sort of infringement, you know, art invading life. And the painters are very objective. You know, they're super cool. Their technique is superb. They are not studio painters. They work from, you know, photos. So they're really photorealists. Like, some aren't. Now, not to say one's better than the other, but it's just to say that there's difference. You see what I mean? a different type of realism, a different concept behind it. And then a great many of them deal with the American landscape, which I think is very exciting because it's so full of energy. The McDonald's and the Kentucky Colonels and the Kmart's and all that stuff and pickup trucks and what have you. And see, our culture is unique in the world. And because it is unique, we have visual manifestations of that culture, you know, which you don't see in Europe. Now, I've lived in Europe, and you don't go, you just don't travel around. We see it in Philadelphia, with all these tacky places along the street, all the cars and all the drive-in fast food chains, conveyor belt food places, aren't they? And, oh, Lord, the bowling alleys, you know, and...
Even banks now are built in logo-style buildings.
Banks, yeah, and porno shops, and, bars, and Pizza Huts, all that stuff, you know. It's just really a hodgepodge of everything. And you see how terrible, and visually it's just so fatiguing, isn't it? And tired of the kind of people I portray go into these places, by the way, and... But still, you can look at it from a positive way and say, well, it's really America, isn't it? It's individualism coming out. That's what this country is about, you know. The Soviet Union, they stamp down the individual. He doesn't amount to a damn, does he? Because government has just whipped him to death. And there's a rule for everything. And he can't even leave the country. It's a prison. The whole damn country is a prison. Now, here we can move around and show our individuality. And that's part of it. And you can say, well, you clean this up and get rid of this trash and tackiness, but then maybe you lose something too. But I think maybe if we analyze it, and maybe something will good will come out of it. I'm certain it will.
I'm just a little interested about this. You're referring to McDonald's as being
some of them are beautiful.
Of individualism. You
know, yeah, well... There is, I know what you're saying, that there is a sameness about this wherever you go, that uniformity. But within that, you see, there also is a lot of individuality that's expressed in that way, too. And everybody dresses, tries to dress a little different here. I mean, anything goes now, doesn't it? And compared to what you might find in overseas, I think there's more of a uniformity involved. Of course, you know, you have fads and styles here too, and keep some of the things the same. But there's just a sort of energy and quality expressed in that sort of thing, which you don't see anywhere else.
So the realists who are painting canvases with McDonald's in them, what do you think that is reflecting back to us about the McDonald's, the potential beauty of it, or
it's... Well, art is involved with truth, isn't it? You can't hide your head. And all that art is down to earth, like my art is down to earth. It's not on a pedestal and say, oh, isn't that nice? Isn't that pretty? And so this is down to earth. People recognize that. And before they went by, they didn't even look at it. And with my work, they say, "Oh, I just saw Hanson down the street today. Boy, you should have been there." You know, oh, they always tell me that they saw my work standing on the street corner, or in a shop, or someplace. And so they're getting to see people. And then maybe they see other people like that. They'll see themselves and say, "Well, I'm not much better, am I? You know, this sort of tacky coat I'm wearing, or pants, or outfit. You know, I could do better. You see." Maybe it'll work that way. I don't know.
It struck me that one of the reasons why artists have moved away from realism over the past 80 years or so is because some of the classical painters and sculptors seem to have taken realism to its limits. I mean, they developed fantastic technique and detail and color. Form where was left to take it, you know, new new places have to be found. But I guess you don't feel
no.
That way.
Well, I mean, this is totally different concept. As I've already told you what the difference is, but no, I don't think that is a problem for some people, of course, who are art historians and worry about stuff like that, and maybe museum directors. But I think it's fairly obvious that the deal with American landscape, you see that that painting can be so detailed, you don't know if it's done by hand or printed, you know, like it's like a big photograph. So it's the same thing as my work. The art enters into your space, into your life as an object, you know. Is this a postcard or isn't it? See, it's a big blown up postcard or just painted, you know. It's but that offers a sort of a challenge, you know, for you to understand about that. If it were too obvious, why you'd say, you know, so what about it? And also the subject matter and the way it's done, the new ways of working with the airbrush, and the stylelessness of it, you know, objectivity. And no attempt to really, I'm sure it's there, because I know my friends are, I have a number of photorealist friends, and but you wouldn't think there was any formalistic ordering there. But they're, I mean, they're conscious of that. If it's an artist, you have to be conscious of colors, and this shape is more pleasing than the other, but they take their photographs, their slides, and you know you can make a composition with that too, like a photographer does, and then you can eliminate some things, which they do, and add little things, you know. So but over and above all, it's just so American, don't you think? I mean, those the objects, and you can say, well, that's been done with French, but there's always this bit of romanticism involved with that sort of thing, and this is sort of, you know, really tough imagery. Maybe it won't look so tough in years to come, and nostalgia will creep in as it does a number of things, but I think they'll hold up a long time.